listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit livingthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 232 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and a rather tired-looking Sean Orford. Can I say that? Do you mind?
Yes, and I think it's on my knees would be more like it.
It's 8:15 in the evening as we record this. When have you been working since?
I started at 5:00 this morning because I was doing Skype work with the Middle East, and they were three hours ahead.
The peace process,
doing the whole thing. Yeah.
It's all right, folks. Yeah. It's all in hand.
It's going to be fine. So 5:00 for me is 8:00 in the morning for them.
Right.
So, and I should be doing the same thing again in the morning. So, and that's the only thing when you're working internationally, as it were, is the time shift.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hang in there. You've got another half an hour, and you can fall asleep.
Okay.
I can see myself out.
Yeah.
We're talking about death and funerals this week, but don't hang up just yet. We're going to try and make it positive, or it's going to be positive, isn't it?
The world is always positive.
It is, yeah, but it's an interesting thing. We've had an email from a listener, a really poignant one, actually, so we'll talk about that shortly. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for the show notes and links for this episode. There's a few we'll be sticking in there and all the previous ones as well. Stick your email address in one of the boxes on the website and we'll send you alerts every week for this podcast. And you also get some free meditation files and a discount code for our book, Living the Present, which I see we've shifted a few copies of this week.
It's very good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Getting out there. Much appreciated.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Second edition will be out next year.
Yeah, we have a plan.
We have a plan.
Plans are forming. Things are happening.
Yeah.
How you been? What's up?
I'm good. We went to... it's going to become a tradition. This is our second year going to Derby. They have a massive Christmas fair.
Okay.
In the Roundhouse.
Nice place, Derby. I don't think I've ever even come close to passing by.
Nice place. And the Roundhouse is an old engine shed. So it's the Roundhouse and the building next to it. And loads of fabulous kind of cheeses and foods and mince pies and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But it feels like the beginning of Christmas now.
Yeah, we're getting there, aren't we?
Yeah. But we all said when we were there, it was like, yes, this feels like Christmas has begun.
You know, the temperature's dropped a bit, and it's a chill. The fire
on.
Log
fire going, yeah.
Yeah, you might hear the odd spit and spot and crackle of the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, not bad, is it? I'm excited. I've got two letters written in my little what I've been up to, VR, virtual reality.
Yeah,
I know you haven't had a chance to have a go yet.
No.
I can't remember being this excited about something I've tried technology-wise since I was a wee nipper. People that follow me on Instagram might have seen the odd little thing I've put on there, but sat next to me in my office the whole time, I've got these VR goggles, high-end VR goggles, which can transport me anywhere in the world in a flash.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know if anyone knows anything about virtual reality and where it's up to, but it's seriously amazing technology. It's the power of it is, I don't know. Every now and again, people come into our office and they'll see them on the desk and they'll just say, oh, what's that? And I'll say, well, have a go. And the reaction that people... I need to stop filming reactions, actually, because people are kind of putting their arms out. Oh, my goodness me, this is incredible. So,
Yeah. Well, I'm going to come and play.
You've got to come and have a go. The Google Earth app is amazing. You can just fly around the world. And a lot of it's rendered in 3D, like Manhattan, so you can zoom in and out of buildings. And
like you're flying.
Like you're flying. Yeah, you can kind of change
like
the scale.
Superman.
Yeah, exactly like Superman. So I was flying over the Golden Gate Bridge today, and I was kind of reliving our honeymoon from 7 years ago. So I managed to find the hotel where we stayed and little paths we walked down, you know, as we were exploring San Francisco. And then I zoomed down the coast through Big Sur and down to Los Angeles. Whew. Yeah, it's another world. It's amazing stuff. So more on that in the future, because I think, interesting, I mean, from our perspective, the therapeutic side of virtual reality
is incredible, really.
When people have a go of it, and some of the demos and things that people are trialling, the developers, having a real impact on people's lives. So this is proper.
I'm wondering about things like dealing with post-trauma and anxiety issues and stuff like that. There's a whole load of things that you could do.
Yep.
So as a therapist, you both have to have goggles on. You both have to be in the same place.
Which is doable. Yeah. That's fine. That's all doable. And even, you know, standing on the edge of a cliff or a wall in one of the games in this thing, I'm sat in an office in Birkenhead, but I'm kind of gingerly looking over the edge of a wall, and it's the sense of depth and height. Mm. It's exactly as it would be in real life. So you have this kind of fear that you don't want to step off the wall, even though you just... Because your mind just transports you there.
Yeah.
Because it's so realistic.
Yeah, I'm going to come and play.
Yeah, you've got to try it, man. Yeah. I could talk about VR all day, but we have a listener request from a good dear listener of ours. And I'll just read out what they sent, actually, because they had this kind of... Well, it's self-explanatory, so... He says, my wife's mum and dad both died last year and they wanted their ashes scattered on Rossilli Beach, so we went down to the Gower for a week. I've never been to the Gower. I need to go.
Absolutely beautiful.
I believe it is.
Absolutely
incredible.
Absolutely beautiful, yeah.
On their wedding anniversary, we scattered their ashes together in a trench we dug in the sand as the tide came in. We wrote their initials by the trench and then drank a toast to them as the waves washed it all away. It was more moving than I was expecting and very apt. In a moment, the initials, the trench and their ashes were all gone with one wave, just like everything we have built in our lives and our lives themselves end in an instant, never to be seen again. So that, I thought, was a pretty powerful example of what, I don't know, how we can kind of see off the people that we love in a fitting kind of way. Have you been to many funerals in your life, Sean?
Well, it's the magic thing about the older you get, the more funerals you go to.
Yeah,
and I've been to lots, and that's been from kind of relatives through to clients, through to friends, all kinds of things.
Yeah,
that I've done.
Now, this example wasn't a funeral as such; it was more of a personal little added extra that they thought.
But if you think about it, a funeral is a ritual to mark an ending.
Yeah,
isn't it? And one of the things we were talking about before we came on air is. Is the funeral for the person that's died, or is it for the people that are living?
Yeah.
And for me, funerals are for people that are alive, not for people that are dead.
A chance to say goodbye.
Yeah. But also, it does things like it gives meaning to a life. Yeah? It's like the idea that people come along, we say, pay their respects to this person. They're acknowledging the fact that this person died.
Yeah.
And we had the thing... couple of months ago with Mally, who died. Mally Moore, lovely, lovely lady, who kind of died unexpectedly, really. But she was such a vibrant character that it was standing room only there. Mm. You know what I mean? That people were paying their last respects. And that was a beautiful thing to acknowledge her life and the things that she did. But the people that were there, the theirness was for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
You don't have to go into too far if you don't want to, but have you got you planned out for yourself? Do you know what your funeral is going to be like? What's going to happen? Music that's going to play?
I've decided that I'm going to actually buy my own funeral, mainly because I don't want, at the point where I do turn up my toes, I don't want other people to be having to be worrying about things. So I want to get it all done so that there will be a box on the shelf. And you can pull it off, and everything that needs to be in it is in it. It's like it's a good death box.
Yeah.
All the code you need, every address you need, all that kind of stuff. But in there will be a funeral as well. And the way I would buy the funeral, I need to go and talk to the people about it, but the way I would buy a funeral would be I'd buy a basic funeral that they can kind of tweak if they want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if I buy a basic coffin, if they want brass handles, they can put brass handles. You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I've covered all the basics.
Mm.
Yeah. And
do you think it's something that people should spend more time thinking about at any stage of life, really?
Well, virtually everybody that I deal with who's facing death acts like they're surprised.
Mm.
It's like, well, I never thought this was going to happen to me. And like, here it is happening. And that's almost like at any age.
Yeah.
And you can kind of understand if someone's in their 20s or 30s or their 40s, you can understand them being very surprised. But I have people in their 70s and 80s who are very surprised, you know.
Do you think it helps to talk at any age, at my age, even as a child even, to talk about death and talk about how you want to be remembered and how maybe you want it to happen,
yeah,
the funeral? you think?
No, I think that we've lost touch with it. We've lost touch with both birth and death.
It's something what we just outsource and...
Yeah, it doesn't happen
someone
with
else,
us, does it?
Leave it to someone else.
Yeah. It's like, if I buy this funeral, I will buy this funeral, what'll happen is, at the point where I do tip over the edge, yeah, someone just needs to ring the appropriate number, and men appear, usually in sort of dark suits.
From helicopters, hats, yeah.
And they they take away the body, don't they? And they take it away to the funeral parlour or wherever it is, the chapel of rest, and they do what they need to do to it, and then it gets put in a box. And then they arrange it all, don't they? The people then appear a couple of weeks later with the box in a sort of caravanette. It's not a caravanette, is it? What do they call it? It's a... what do you mean, bodies in?
You mean the car?
A hearse. It's not a caravanette, it's a hearse.
Yeah, you could use a caravanette. Yeah,
so, but and a couple of cars, and everybody gets in, off they go. But it's all been organised.
Yeah.
And in that sense, we have outsourced the whole thing.
Mm.
Yeah. When I was a kid, people had houses with a front room, and the front room was used for birthdays, Easter, Christmas, and it was where you laid out your dead bodies. And then people would come round and they'd have a wake. And I always thought wakes happened after funerals as I got older. But when I was a kid, the wake happened before the funeral, happened before and after.
Yeah.
But everyone would come around and maybe have a drink to the person who was in the coffin, and the coffin was open.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they wouldn't screw the lid down until they were taking them off to the funeral.
Yeah, people tend... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That, I'm assuming... I haven't been to that many funerals, but that doesn't happen anymore. Like, dead bodies in houses.
I don't know whether anybody does. I mean, people go to the chapel of rest, don't they? Would it be considered these days bad taste to have, you know, the dead body of your, you know, your partner or your mother or something in the front room? And people would pop around to pay their respects, which is no different to people going to the chapel of rest to do the same thing.
Yeah. I haven't been to that many funerals, probably four or five, perhaps. But even then, I haven't been to one where it's been in, like, an open casket type thing. I've seen them in the movies, but does that still happen?
Yeah. I've seen things in the States where you have drive-through funeral parlours, and people can drive through and pay their respects to the person, and it's like driving past a shop window and the person is in the window in the casket, and you can drive past and, you know, say a few words.
Yeah.
Like a drive-through.
I saw it in Death of Stalin recently. It was a comedy.
Of course, he was in a glass case for a long time, wasn't he?
I'm not sure, but yeah, it was certainly... Afterwards, you know, in a week after, people, the whole city was invited to, or the country even was invited to...
And people that they queued up, didn't they? And loads and loads of people.
Yeah, Lenin as well. Is that right?
Yeah,
one of those Russian dudes. I mean, yeah, we all do it differently. Public, private, big, small. Would you like a? Are you thinking a small little service, or?
I don't mind.
You want the world and his wife?
I don't mind.
All our podcast listeners are going to want to.
They've got to, haven't they? I mean, it's probably going to be broadcast worldwide. I've got this
virtual reality.
I've got a fascination with the idea, and maybe once you've set up the studio with the green screen, told that I could do this.
Yeah.
Because I could actually be at my own funeral. And I'd love to be there and say, I'd love to be with you here today.
Interesting you should say that, because one of the things I've been seeing in virtual reality demos and talks is the idea that you can capture a moment or a person and they can be relived. So one of the things I saw was that they got an old chap, one of the last remaining guys who was in a concentration camp.
Oh, wow.
And they got him to sit in this studio, lit from all sides, and videoed from all sides with special equipment in 3D. And basically it's captured him sitting in a sofa talking about the experience, and people can then relive that in VR and move around him and see him talking, so that we don't lose these stories, you know, that are important lessons.
Yeah.
And then I was chatting with my family over the weekend, had dinner with my parents and my in-laws, had a glass or two of wine, and we got chatting about all sorts. And one of the things was, I was talking about VR and how that we'll be able... I think technology will get us to the point where we can capture our loved ones as they are now, as they're around, and then we'll be able to pop the goggles on or whatever it is that we wear or use, and we'll be able to interact with them, even have chats with them, because they'll kind of recognise their voice. You'll be able to talk to them again. And we were discussing whether or not that was a good or a bad thing, like a positive thing, a therapeutic thing, or whether we need to say goodbye, whether a funeral is, you know, that's it, that's goodbye. And or would you want to be able to speak to people that aren't around anymore every now and again, just to kind of check in? And
I don't know what it is that you're talking to, because the consciousness of the person isn't there. Is it? Are we saying that we can capture consciousness digitally?
I think technology will, as long as we don't blow ourselves up, I think AI will reach that point where you'll be able to synthesize the voice easily enough. But it's trickier, obviously, capturing a character and like that personality.
Yeah.
That's really tricky. But it's not impossible. I can see a point where we could get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're on the verge of something which is very, very different to what's going on.
Yeah, because you can already have chats of sorts with Siri and Alexa and that. Yeah, they can do basic tasks. But think 10, 20 years down the line, with all the progress that's going to come, hopefully, progress, inverted commas, maybe it's not progress.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these options will be available to us.
Maybe there's a point where you have the option not to die, but they can take your brain out and put it into some kind of robotic device, and then you can interact through it.
Yeah.
Don't know. The whole thing is weird. But back to death and dying, which is where we got sidetracked.
Maybe you don't have to die. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But
well, maybe we.
That's a whole other topic.
I need to go and try your gear, and then we need to do a podcast. And
yeah,
I want a meditation one where I can go and sit under a banyan tree somewhere and meditate.
I can chuck some coconuts at you. Yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Any more ideas? You've got any pipeline for your funeral or anything you've been to a funeral
that's had
an impact on you?
I think that the funeral is for the living.
Yeah.
Yeah, it isn't what I need to be done at my funeral. It's what do they need to be done at my funeral.
Mm.
You know, I mean, if it was me, it would be a spoof. You know, it would be let's look on the bright side of life and things like fire, get you to burn. You know, I mean, to me, it would just be a joke. Yeah. And I, if it was up to me, everyone would come in bright clothes and they'd be drinking Prosecco and they'd be having a party.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that the thing that we don't do, we celebrate birth, but we don't celebrate death. I think we should celebrate death. You know, the fact that someone's managed to get to 80 and they're still intact and what they've done in their life, isn't it amazing?
The things, the changes they've lived through, the time from, you know, 19-whatever to 2017.
You know, I mean, one of the things I think, I mean, we're going to look at resources later, but one of the things I think that people should do, and I haven't done it yet, but I should do it, is I think people should write their life down.
Yep.
Yeah, not in massive detail, not like the Encyclopedia Britannica, but just, like, write down in however many thousand words what happened in their life. Yeah, and then that becomes a chapter in the book of the family. And if everybody did it, you know, you could go back and check. You know, we're forever saying, I wonder what happened and where this and that kind of, but if it was there, you could go back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose knowledge. We lose knowledge. We lose understanding. We lose tradition.
Yeah,
or that kind of stuff. You lose custom because it dies with people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean, I do need to write down what it was like when I was a child, right the way through to what it's like now.
Yeah, a lot of it's in your books that you've written already.
Yeah, yeah, there is bits out there.
But you need to map it all out.
But no, I mean, things like when I was a kid, plastic didn't exist. It was pressed tin and something called Bakelite. Which is really odd, hard, sort of plasticky stuff.
Now we've got an ocean full of the stuff.
Yeah, right, yeah. Everything came in paper bags. You know, even when people went to buy cigarettes, they weren't usually in boxes. People bought them loose and then put them in their cigarette case.
Right.
They didn't have cigarette packets, although they did exist, but lots of people would buy their cigarettes loose.
And not that people should be buying cigarettes at all, but that's probably an example of things where we've kind of gone too far, isn't it? Because all this throwaway society, plastic litter
but
in the ocean. Things were okay back then, weren't they, in that sense?
Tomorrow is bin day, and it's the grey bin, which is the recycling bin, and every week it's crammed full of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's all the wrapping from all the stuff that we have bought that in the past would have been in brown paper bags, and those could have been burnt on the fire.
Yep.
And then done. Yeah.
My kids are at one especially, the elder, my elder and me two lads, are pretty obsessed with death, which is partly my fault because I've not kind of hidden it from them at all. So when they ask me a question about death and dying and what happens, I'll answer it quite openly. And not all kids their age are the same, so every now and again there are little issues. Like their childminder, who's like a second mum, really. She had a dog who died quite suddenly, recently, and she was a bit afraid to talk to my two lads about why he wasn't around anymore or what happened, whereas she did the right thing because some kids aren't up for that chat, are they? They get upset about it, whereas she waited for me to okay it, and I said, oh yeah, talk to them about it, you know, tell them any level of detail they want, just talk to them. But maybe I'm not doing it the right way, maybe I'm wrong, but do you think we should talk more about death?
I think the problem is, it's not that we should talk about it, it's that we should actually live it and be it and experience it.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why it always was that children would be encouraged to have pets is because they would have to deal with life and death.
Yeah.
You know, a rabbit, a hamster, they don't live that long.
We had two fish and they lasted 2 weeks and that was it. But that was an early lesson for the two lads. Yeah. One was called Sean, actually. So.
Is that the one? Did he die first?
Yeah, did he die? Sean or Al? Can't remember. Maybe.
But that whole idea about, okay, your pet's died and you've got to come to terms with that, but then the process of going and burying it in the garden, yeah, all that kind of stuff. And what are we teaching kids? We're teaching them about that process of life and death that we all have to face. And that idea that it's actually been commercialised, how many births happen in the house these days as opposed to in maternity units somewhere?
It's very rare, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've only once seen a body, a dead body.
Right.
And I was quite young, actually. I was probably 10, 9, 10, maybe 11 at a push. And it was a next-door neighbour. He died in the night, I think some kind of brain issue. Really sudden. And, yeah, I was just playing football out in the front with my brother and my pal who lived across the way. And out he came in a wheelchair with the sheet just up to his neck. And I was like, we just kind of stopped playing football. And
it didn't cover his head?
No.
Wow.
Our kind of mouths hung open a bit. We were kind of fascinated by it, really. We weren't like running around screaming or running in tears. But I still remember it now, and it's quite a big deal. But I think that's the only time I've ever seen a body. Whereas I'm guessing many years ago it was much more commonplace, you know, when people didn't die in hospitals or in homes for the elderly, that kind
of
thing.
But if you're in places like India where people have burned on a pyre of wood, very often part of the ceremony would be that the person is laid on the pyre, but everybody would go by and they would actually touch the body.
Yeah.
Some people would kiss the body, but they'd touch the body. And in touching the body, you were identifying that the person was no longer there. It was a body.
Okay.
And because a body of a dead person or a dead... I say person, and in persons I'm including all the animals like cows and pigs and everything else as well. But when a living being dies, the difference in the body when it's alive, which is vibrant and has this kind of vital energy in it, a kind of a bioenergy, and when that being dies, it's like they vacated the premises. Mm. And the difference between a pig that's running around the field and a pig that's on a slab is so weird, because if you feel a pig that's alive, you can feel its life underneath your hands. Mm. When it's dead, it's like a piece of meat, it's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's true for human beings as well. And it's one of the things about when you do experience human death is that at the point where the person dies, if they didn't die in pain and they didn't look a bit anguished, yeah, they look very much like them, but as the blood and the fluid settle, the shape of the body and the face changes.
Wow.
So they don't actually look always like the person. And one of the problems with funeral directors is you go there and because they're trying to make the person look normal, they kind of overdo it with the makeup. sometimes. And the person looks so totally unlike anybody that you ever knew. It's one of the hardest things. And people say, you know, I want to go and see this person in the Chapel of Rest. And the amount of people that that I've worked with that have come away wishing they hadn't done that.
Mm.
You know, it's a whole range, isn't it? We go from that idea that it's okay to burn a body, for everybody to be aware of the body. In some traditions, the eldest son would have the honour, and it was seen an honour, of cracking open the skull so that it didn't explode in the flames. Yeah, to let the pressure out. And that was seen as a good thing. If you go back to some of the Red Indian cultures where somebody died, and they would actually literally put them out onto the rocks and allow, and they would lay them out ritualistically on the rocks, and then allow the birds to clean the bones, to allow the birds to...
Wow.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All these funny, interesting, strange customs, which a thousand and one. We had an example of one from our listener earlier on, amazing one, but yeah, I mean... That's hardcore.
But if you go,
Native American one.
If you go to places like Malta, where you're, because of the lack of space, you're buried standing up. The funeral, the coffin goes in upright.
Yeah. Okay.
So you are in a grave, but it's an upright grave. It's not a flat grave.
I'd be cool with standing up. It's easier to chat, isn't it? Or say hello to your neighbour.
Yeah. How you doing? Virtual reality.
I mean, I'm going to stick a link to the Wikipedia funeral page, which lists every funeral tradition based on religion and spirituality.
Yeah.
It's probably not a quite exhaustive list, because there'll be millions of different slight variations. And
I mean, whereas in our country here, it can be 2 or 3 weeks before you get a slot in the crematorium to take your beloved up there to move them on. In Islam, you have to be buried within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it's done. And I often think that that's actually quite a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, done, finished, gone. Dealt with, as opposed to that kind of waiting around.
Yeah, waiting for a date. It's going to happen. I usually get charged with doing an order of service. Ed, can you do it as an order of service? Okay. And then, go on. But I mean, even when after the funeral, I'm assuming this is what happened with our listener, that the funerals probably happened separately for the mum and the dad, and then they had this combined service, obviously a very personal thing of their own, which they planned and thought through. But I think that's what I love about it. They've obviously put a huge amount of thought into over, I don't know, months perhaps, and then thought, let's do that. And even made a little holiday out of it, and so they could really enjoy the area. And I don't know if that was a special place for them as a family. I'm guessing so. Because for me, I would think of doing something the same in Northumberland with my ashes.
So, because that's interesting, because you've already decided you're going to be cremated then.
Actually, I'm not sure. I'm open to it, but...
It's what I say to people is, look... And I think this is quite a tough thing, and I think I'm going to have to come to terms with this in a more factual sense to actually complete my death box. But I say to everybody, I really don't mind. I don't mind if you send me to the dog meat factory. I don't mind if you recycle my parts for other people to use, or you use the cadaver for to train surgeons. You know, I really don't mind. It's like when I finish with this, you do what you want with it. Yeah? And in that sense, for me, the funerals are about the living. And that's the thing that's important, and because of that, I want them to have that decision. I don't want to say I want this to happen and that to happen. What I want to say is, look, I've paid for a basic funeral. You can adapt that how you want.
Yeah,
however it works for you. Whatever
that's
you
cool.
need. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think I would. I want to get cremated. On the current thinking, I do a bit of work for a company who do. It's not very exciting, but they do energy management. So they, for big companies that use a lot of energy, they manage that, monitor how much, and help them bring the cost down. And one of them, one of their clients is a very large funeral directors. So I actually have seen the figures on how much energy it
takes to consume a body,
to cremate a body, and tremendous amount of gas,
is it?
And obviously all that heat that does its job but is then kind of lost instantly, so it's a really inefficient way.
And they could be heating the water of all the local houses.
They could, yeah, and there are actually talks about how they can use that heat to drive other things and create energy from it, which I think is interesting, so I'm interested in that. But I do like the idea. I think it was... Oh, I can't remember the name of the American scientist guy. I've forgotten it. He was asked a question about what he wants to happen to him when he dies, and he likes the idea of being put back in the ground and kind of, rather than being turned to dust or smoke and sent into the atmosphere, he likes the idea of his body kind of becoming part of the land again, the soil, and trees and worms growing in out of him, and trees growing, or I don't know, crops, that kind of thing. I'm kind of down with that, really.
Yeah.
But again, I wouldn't want to be too specific. I'd like to give the... I just want people to think about it and do what they thought.
There was an amazing Attenborough, you know, Blue Planet 2.
Yeah, I haven't seen them yet. I've recorded them.
There was a stunning thing where a big, I think it was a blue whale, a big whale fell to the bottom
of the sea. I've seen similar things.
And how, what happened over an 18-month period to that carcass.
That long, really?
Yeah.
Because you get the big sharks initially going for it, don't you?
But in the end, all the bones disintegrate, they go. And there were these fabulous little guys that come along and they squirt acid into the bone and to let it dissolve so they can then ingest it.
Wow.
Really clever kind of stuff.
So every little tiny bit is used. And
when you look at evolution like that, it's like that's quite an amazing thing to happen, you know, that so many beings have specialised in, hey, you know, I eat nose hair. You know, where's, take me to the nose, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And how everything does get recycled and reused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I really don't mind. If you think about if a natural situation existed, should such a thing be that way, you know, we'd be off somewhere and we'd drop dead like a chimpanzee or whatever. And then our body would be recycled and would be... reprocessed or whatever.
Yep.
I'm not sure at what point human beings decided to look after the bodies of people that had died. I mean, there are places in the world where there are caves that are full of skulls and things like that, aren't they?
Yep.
You know, where people go to the bones of the ancestors. You know?
Yep, that's right.
So I don't know, but I think that what it comes down to all the time for me is that death isn't about the person that's died, it's about the people that are alive. Yeah, and that's why, I mean, I'd rather give the people that are alive after me the right to make the decision what they need.
Yeah, I think so. I think what the great thing about our listener is that it was they thought of it themselves. They obviously spent a lot of time thinking about what was appropriate and what would give a lot of meaning to them. Because they've created a place now where they can go back every year, whenever they want, and you remember the people. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I think outsourcing that part of things to the people that are left.
But is that what a gravestone does, though? Is that where you can go back and that's the focus of attention, that you go back and focus on the grave?
It can be. There's no rules, are there? I think as long as you keep putting a bit of thought into it. I think the trouble, if it is trouble, arises within things like this, is where you just let someone else take care of it and not give it the time it needs.
Yeah.
Because by processing these things, as our listener has, it helps, doesn't it, therapeutically, and it helps you become a better person, really.
I love it when you go around the Marine Lake here, down in...
West Kirby.
West Kirby, yeah. And you go around and there's all these benches. That are, like, this is Gladys Wentworth on this bench. And and different times of year you come around, there's flowers on it and that kind of stuff. But that idea that there's a connection for people between coming and sitting on this beautiful bench looking across this beautiful view and the person that they love. I think those kind of things are quite lovely.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Should we call it a day there?
Yeah, I want a bench. Okay, I've decided.
He wants a bench.
Okay.
He wants to be fired out of a cannon.
Yeah. Can you imagine that being turned into ashes and then being set up in a firework?
Yeah. And a rocket into space? That'd be quite cool.
Yeah.
I'll
leave it to you.
You got a resource for us?
Well, my resource is...
Death box.
Create your own death box. It's like, pay it some attention. It doesn't matter what age you are. Get a box out and put in that box all the information that anybody would need to know if you died. Yeah? And that might include your will. It might include a funeral if you want to buy one.
Your Facebook login, so that...
Yeah, all of your codes, everything that people need, you know, your bank details, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So that in the... Because the amount of times I've worked in with families where someone has died and they're struggling to find the information to be able to get stuff and do stuff, you know. And it's like your passport number, your driving licence number... You know, your account numbers, all that kind of stuff, your national insurance number, they're all such important things we don't think about.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right. Death box, cool. Well, I'm going to actually mention a funeral directors. I did a bit of work with these guys about a year ago. Really lovely folks. They've opened a funeral director in Heswell on the Wirral. Robert Quinn, funeral directors on Telegraph Road.
Yeah. And I have to say, your design out there is very sexy. It's a beautiful...
funeral director.
It is a beautiful building, and it's a very attractive building.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't do the refurb of the building, but hopefully the design...
All the lettering on it, the colouring.
Appropriate and tasteful and all that stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, check out Robert Quinn, funeral directors. Robert's lovely, his sister Karen as well. Any questions, they're great guys. So.
Yeah.
Have a weird.
Sounds cool to me.
Are we all done?
Yeah, I'm done.
You can go to bed now.
Okay.
And he's off. Yeah. We'll be back next week. I think I've had a couple of emails actually about people that want to talk about environmental anxiety, about how all this climate change lark is kind of freaking them out a bit. And I can relate to that stuff, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I had someone telling me today that if we all stop eating red meat, that what a difference that would make to the global warming.
Yep.
And it is sheep and cows. They didn't mention pigs, you know? It was sheep and cows.
Is sheep red meat, is it?
Sheep and beef, red meats, they say.
Yeah, I follow that stuff quite closely, so we'll talk about all that and the anxiety that comes with it,
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
Have a good week, Sean.
And you, take care. Bye now.
See you later. Bye.